Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shabrew.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, doppelganger video thingy doodles. I can't quite say it yet because we didn't do the disclaimer, but we'll get to that in a second. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next.
Warning.
Warning, yes. This is going to be a little bit of an adult themed episode. No way around it. So if there are little ears around.
Yes, your mini nerds. Might need to point them elsewhere.
Yeah, earmuffs. So I think this is something we've talked about, I think as long as 2 years ago. We've talked about it before.
Yeah, I think so. I think we speculated on it when swapping out like voice tracks and videos and things. It became plausible because you could do realistic lip movement, facial movements and that sort of thing.
Yep. Yeah. So you could take an actual video of the example that I saw was George W. Bush, and you could take, it was a video of him. And then you could take a different audio and map the muscles of his face kind of to the word structures and then play, you know, me talking or whatever. And it would be like my audio coming out of George W. Bush's mouth. So more recently, someone on Reddit who goes by the name Deepfake figured out how to, in his spare time and on his personal computer, figured out how to use AI and machine learning where he would, if he had enough photos of a person, then he could map their face onto somebody else's body in a video. And the sort of more family-friendly version of this is that there's this sort of meme where people are putting Nick Cage in every movie. So they'll take like Indiana Jones and replace Harrison Ford's face with Nicolas Cage. And hilariously, there was an SNL episode where someone was doing a Nicolas Cage impression and then they actually put Nicolas Cage's face on the person. So someone doing an impression of Nicolas Cage, but
overlaid with Nicolas Cage.
Yes, doppelganger of Nicolas Cage doing an impression of Nicolas Cage. So, of course, people started taking, you know, famous actresses and putting their faces on adult performers.
Mm-hmm.
And
of course, because that is the internet.
Yeah, it's, and so as one writer put it, the perfect smoothie of everything that's awful about the internet all in one one package.
Smoothie, that's a descriptive image.
Yeah, I thought it was a great.
Yeah.
It's more than a mashup. It's like, and so, okay.
Smoothie.
So let's start off by saying that you know, I've forced myself to watch a couple of these featuring Daisy Ridley in one case and Gal Gadot from Wonder Woman. And it's extremely convincing. You know, it's not like you can tell something's screwed up and okay, but a lot of times the overall video is kind of low quality, like camera shot looking, phone shot looking video. So it's pretty easy to imagine people being tricked, especially if they're taken out of context, be like, no way.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're distracted enough by the other content that to not care.
Right. So it's already pretty convincing is the point. But Motherboard and Wired and I think Vice have been interviewing people familiar with the matter on all sides of the fence and AI experts. And they're like, and the experts are like, yeah, this is going to be, you know, the quality is going to probably in the next 3 to 6 months, the quality is going to be indistinguishable from reality. Because a lot of the things that people are, the stuff that people are seeing is based on a really small set of data. It's not particularly mm-hmm. large sets of data because it's just like, you know, goobers over the weekend, you know, doing this in their basement. They're not actually doing, not
right.
Of course,
they
there
don't
are a million,
actually have like
yeah, yeah, million pictures of Daisy Ridley available, ready to go.
Yeah, but if you had someone like if people started doing this intentionally, where you had like motion capture rigs and that sort of thing,
it doesn't even need like that's
well,
the
I guess,
thing.
I guess that's the point is you don't need that.
Right. It's like so. There are a couple of things. There's a couple of interesting things here, just from a technical standpoint, so people can kind of get their heads around this. So this one person was kind of doing it. No one apparently knows the person's name yet, but whatever, his name is Deepfake, and it became He started like just publishing videos, kind of like trolly, like 4chan type stuff. Mm-hmm. And so people were like, whoa, where'd that come from? Oh, it's fake. And then so, but it's using open stuff, open source stuff. I think I saw TensorFlow mentioned. So someone else made a deepfakes Reddit. Well, it might have been the same person, but there became a deepfakes Reddit, and someone on there created an app called Deepfakes App or Fakes App or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it makes it incredibly easy for anyone. Like if you are technical enough to install a Minecraft mod, you can probably run this software. And it's like, you know, so before you know it, there's 15, 20,000 people on this subreddit. And they're like outdoing each other.
That escalated quickly.
Yeah, exactly. That escalated quickly is exactly the point. So, you know, you can imagine that this is just going to, two things you can imagine. First of all, there's going to be tons of videos like this, and they're going to be really, really convincing. So, okay. So that's kind of the reality that I wanted to imagine in this episode.
Which on the one hand, when you're talking about using it for adult content is one thing. And I agree. It's a smoothie of everything bad on the internet. But you also have to look at, like, we've had issues of certain countries interfering with the electoral processes of certain other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And all kinds of just political nonsense.
Right. So you can imagine it being used in, you know, let's say non-recreationally.
Yeah.
So, and if you don't think, oh my, it's these articles are just unbelievable. So we'll link to them in the show notes, but particularly Motherboard. I guess that is Vice. That's why I saw those two things. So people, this is becoming so popular so fast that extra like services are springing up around it. One called Find Porn Face. So another one called Porn Star by Face. And there's another one called Doppelbanger. And
Awful as that is, I appreciate the name.
Yeah. So, and what you can do, like, they make it really easy. It's like, okay, you got the fakes app. Yeah, but how do I find, because you need to find, like,
no source material.
Right. You need a picture of a face. You need a lot of pictures of a face for lots of different angles. And then you need someone who has a similar body, because that it needs to be that way. It can't, like, make that realistic. Right. So it can't just, like, put Daisy Ridley's face on like Arnold Schwarzenegger and have it like magically make sense. So you need to find someone who's roughly has the same build, and then the head kind of makes sense on the body. Otherwise, because they show somewhere it doesn't make sense, and it's like, ooh, yeah. Some like failed experiments. They're really grotesque. So now all of a sudden everyone has a problem. Like, well, who's got the same kind of body as Daisy Ridley? Oh, well, now this new search.
Yeah, there's a search engine where you can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you just go grab a video off Pornhub or something, and then, you know, off to the races. So that, okay, so that's, let's just assume that this is going to continue, you know, that's just going to happen. Like, yeah, it happened.
It's a thing now. This is now the world. This is now a part of our reality.
Yeah, deepfakes are a thing now. So a whole bunch of wild stuff crops up around this. One more thing. It doesn't do it. There's no audio version of this, so it doesn't sound like Daisy Ridley. The audio of whatever was in the movie is the audio.
Right.
So you don't have Daisy Ridley saying all this stuff that the adult actress is saying, which I think is an important piece yet. Right. That's the important piece right now. But I presumably that will, the thing we talked about earlier, presumably those two things will merge in an unholy union.
Yeah.
And we'll have, you know, George W. in Everybody Does Raymond doing, you know,
Raymond,
right. In his own voice.
Yeah.
You know, not in somebody else's voice, the original actor's voice. So, okay. So that's the sort of, like, what does this mean? Okay. So let's just say that it's a thing, it can be done, and the voice thing happens too. So
I think it suddenly means it sucks a little more to be incredibly popular and attractive.
Oh, well, see, don't forget that people are also doing this to like their stepsister or the girl in school that they have a crush on.
Or their ex that cheated on them.
Ex that cheated on is another big one.
Yeah. Or their coworker they have a grudge against.
Exactly. Yeah. All that stuff. That's in all these articles. Like, that stuff's all happening. So here's the wild thing. If revenge porn is a known thing, you know, ex-girlfriend, you've got videos of her on your phone that she probably doesn't want her parents to see, and you start emailing it out. That is actually illegal. Mm-hmm. I believe, if it's not illegal now, it's becoming illegal, but that is not allowed.
Yeah, I believe it is illegal.
Okay, so this mashup of someone's face and someone else's body is not illegal because it sort of falls under First Amendment, new creation, parody type thing. So it's like, well, that's not Daisy Ridley. Like, you can't sell, you can't use her likeness. There's some law about not being able to sell it because you're using her likeness to promote some, whatever you're selling.
Right.
That's not allowed, but nobody's selling these. So, okay. So you're not going to really sue them. Some of the platforms have taken this down, just taken a moral stance and been like, no, this is gross. Go somewhere else. But that just moves the rats to another building. So, okay. I kind of think this is good for people who have been victims of revenge porn, because now you can credibly say, no, that's not me.
That's a good point. You have some deniability now.
Yeah. Like, now all of a sudden you can't trust any video. Like, that's the big thing. Like, video for a long time has been the silver bullet in a legal case or in the turn of a political campaign. What happens when all of a sudden you can't trust any video to have actually happened? Mm-hmm. That's weird. Like, think about how much information you get about news. Let's just say news. From video. Someone was like chatting. Wow. Someone was tweeting about this. It was more on the Russian hacking, the Russian Facebook hacking thing. They're tweeting about it and blah, 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 blah. They get to the end of it. It was too trolly, but I wanted to be like, well, here you are, famous guy on Twitter, tweeting it, you know, it was Baratunde. He's tweeting, he's like, hey, I'm about to go through the indictment thing, the PDF, and he's going through it and he's tweeting out like screenshots of sections and then sort of commenting on each section, which is the document was fascinating, but guess right. what? That could have been all BS, but I feel like I read the document like, oh, I know it's in the document.
Right.
But how do I know?
Because you trust the source.
Because I trust the source. But how do I even know if that's, I don't even know if that's the real Baratunde's account. But that's just Twitter with some screenshots. So now if you take that, it's because all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait, I can't trust anything. Like, I already knew, you know, you feel like, oh, don't trust anything you read on the internet. But you do. Like, certain things you do trust on the internet.
Yeah.
And not just certain things, lots of things. So the Facebook thing is just one thing. Like, sometimes, you know, it's happened in the past where a large brand that you trust, say New York Times, gets their website hacked. And somebody puts something in there and you're like, oh, wow, I can't believe that. Wow, geez, I guess it's true. You just trust it.
Yeah, like, I think the internet's killed Morgan Freeman 4 or 5 times now.
Dang, internet, leave him alone.
Yeah.
But if you all of a sudden video, think of any, not that we watch sports ball, but think of you know, sports video, think of obviously politics, you know, not in a parody way, because that, of course, presumably would be funny to some people and not funny to other people, but clearly a parody. Mm-hmm. But something that is actually sort of a mix of the Facebook Russian fake news thing and video, and all of a sudden you've got, I don't know what the solution is. All of a sudden you're like not online anymore. Like, it either becomes like a giant entertainment engine and it is just ignored for anything that really matters. That seems hard.
But people aren't going to do that.
Right. But all of a sudden you've got deniability of video. That isn't, you're going to trust me. You're going to trust me or your lying eyes.
Yeah.
That wasn't me. Oh, look at this security video. It wasn't me.
Yeah. And it just becomes a big game of he said, she said, and there's no proof.
Yep. Video is no longer proof. Yep. So, you know, and of course there are, this came up in one of the articles, and the conversation was basically that the software that's being used to create these things right now leaves some sort of telltale signatures. Like you can kind of tell if something's been Photoshopped and there are people, or at one time, I don't know if you still can, but you can tell what videos came out of this piece of software. But, you know, the experts were like, yeah, but that's just lucky right now. And it's not something that couldn't be changed.
Right. So, give someone time to perfect the technology now that it's a thing that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you start with, you know, 0.01% of a person and a pig. And next thing you know, you have like 0.1% of person and a sheep.
Yeah. All of a sudden you have a spider pig.
Yeah.
Like a whatever Minecraft reference. So I'm trying to think of a technology solution. I feel like there's like a fingerprinting solution here, like a
something blockchain.
Yeah, exactly. That validates the blockchain.
Like stuff's gonna have to be digitally signed somehow.
Right. It's like it's the thing that all the sort of security wonks would be like, oh, all emails should be signed securely. How do you know who that came from?
Right.
Because you don't, but it just hasn't been that big enough of a deal to kind of make the pain of dealing with it a problem. So
right.
It's like,
I can put my public key on my website for people to download and decrypt stuff I send them, but how do they know that, you know, my website hasn't been hacked and someone hasn't put up, you know, another half of...
Here's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Or, I mean, how do you even know that I'm me?
Right. Yeah. How do you even know in the first place? But there's the identity thing initially is like, here's what could happen. YouTube starts to behave, and Vimeo and everybody else, the hosting services, they start to behave the way that the App Store works, where you have to have your apps signed by the developer so that you're not installing viruses on people's computer, you know, phones and computers. So you could imagine that a particular account, you know, you've got a YouTube account, you're going to upload videos, you've got to, and it has to be encrypted, or not encrypted, but signed.
Yeah, you've got to go through some kind of verification process with YouTube first.
Presumably, it's not that so much, I don't care about, that is an issue, but that's not even the issue. That's a different one.
Okay.
So I just want to know that the video that this channel, like every video on this channel is from the person who runs this channel.
Okay.
I don't care who runs this channel, but I want to know that the person who is in charge of this channel actually made these videos. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So like, and that they're not modified from other videos and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Right. So like the reputation can build up over time. And I want to know that this doesn't solve the problem. Because that problem is just that problem would solve things like people hacking the, maybe man in the middling on a video or something.
Stop the person uploading from.
No, it needs to be the subject of the video needs to sign it. Like the George W. or the Daisy Ridley needs to be signed somehow by them to say, yes, this is real. Like that actually was me.
Yeah.
Needs to be verified by the participants somehow. Oh, man.
And that doesn't solve it either, because I'd imagine a lot of people have a lot of things that are real that they don't want to put their name to.
Yeah. It wouldn't, yep, I agree. It wouldn't mean it wasn't Daisy Ridley.
Right.
It would mean that as far as she's concerned, it wasn't.
Right. She doesn't want you to know it was her.
Right. Right. So she's only going to sign the ones she wants to sign anyway. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess you would have some proof, but it would be biased.
Yeah. So you could say, I keep on thinking of, I'm Barack Obama and I approve this message, that thing. Why do we believe that? Because we recognize his voice. But what if somebody can spoof his voice or spoof a video of the audio and video of him saying that? That's not some digital, it's not some fingerprint anymore.
Yeah. I think the only option here is to convince the AI that it has a moral obligation to put some sort of digital signature in the file that says this has been modified.
Okay, so you can find out, yeah, but every video is modified. I mean,
well, but that it's been through this face swapping AI program thing,
right?
You have to convince the AI that it has a moral obligation to tell us that.
Okay. I like this. I like this rabbit hole. Certainly.
I mean, it's open source right now, so that's never going to happen.
True.
You can convince a dozen of them, but there could be two dozen more that, like, you know, I don't care that you haven't done that too with. But
okay, here's a crazy idea. Because now okay. I'm trying to avoid the slippery slope problem, which is basically every video is edited.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, even if it's just trimmed, if it's color corrected, all of those things, they all happen. So, you know, maybe not if you're going straight from your phone, but it's very common for really most edits, any kind of After Effects work, anything, that's all been fine up till now.
Right.
So now there's something that can actually cause a problem, maybe hurt somebody's reputation, maybe embarrass them, maybe bad stuff could happen. So, man, blockchain, really honest to God, it's a big deal. It solves so many problems because what you'd end up with. So like I said, I'm trying to avoid the slippery slope problem. So what I'm imagining is almost like a, you know, view source.
Right.
That shows a public ledger of every edit that's been done to this video.
That shows a public ledger of, like, the version control for this video.
Exactly. Yeah. Like version control. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Think about this. Think about how much data that would be, though. I mean, that's impossible.
Yeah.
It would be impossible.
Now I'm envisioning some kind of Git blockchain app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, how would you... So, in other words, what we're suggesting isn't that you can't do it. It's that there's a audit trail.
History, yeah.
Right, of what this video has gone through. I mean, even this audio recording, I run it through a bunch of stuff after we're done doing it, and it still doesn't sound that great. But, but even, you know, I'm imagining, like, you know, the file format of the MP3, I don't know. I mean, you'd have all this extra metadata of, like, all kind of like the undo history of what I did. And then, oh man, that's a mess though.
Because yeah, it is.
I cut out stuff that isn't suitable for publication. I cut out private conversations that we have before and after the episode.
Yeah, and it's one line of code for me to remove that metadata when processing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would have to be, it couldn't be in the file.
Right.
Yeah, it has to be in the public ledger. Like, that's the whole genius of blockchain is that it's like a publicly accessible database that nobody can edit. That's the genius of it. So, yeah, having it in the metadata is the wrong place for it. You're right. Man, there's no obvious technology solution here. And it ends up with, but what happened with photos? I mean, because nobody trusts a photo.
Right.
Like, if it seems improbable, you're just like, somebody photoshopped it. You know, even on a magazine cover, it's like, please.
Yeah, I mean.
You ain't that skinny, Oprah. Or whatever. Like, airbrushing.
Are photos even admissible as evidence in court anymore?
I believe so.
I know for a while, and maybe still, but I know for a while digital photos weren't, at least here locally.
It's funny, isn't it?
So yeah.
I think you can forensically determine, maybe not. Maybe it's not foolproof. I'm sure it's not foolproof, but I don't know. Honestly, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, either way, even if they are, and video ends up being the same thing, so maybe a forensic scientist can tell the difference in a court of law, but the average person who's watching this video to inform their political decision or provide some questionable entertainment isn't a forensic scientist.
Yeah, it's like we need a Snopes for video. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
But then you're just relying on the word of other people that you also don't know.
Right. I had this conversation like last summer. I had a really heavily beer fueled late night conversation with my brother and my brother-in-law about the fake news thing. And it took a long time to get everybody on the same page, but eventually everybody understood, like, oh, I'm trusting my news sources. So my brother-in-law, big New York Times fan, and he was just sort of like shaking his head, like, how can people believe, you know, there's more right-wing papers like Fox News or whatever. Or, that's not a paper, I know, but,
yeah,
you know, how can they believe these stories? And I'm like, well, how do you believe the New York Times? And he's like, well, the New York Times is like a journalistic organization. I'm like, well, what if they think that about Fox News? He's like, yeah, but it's not. I'm like, yeah, in your opinion. But,
right,
you know, but New York Times is slanted. It's not, it's very, it's a fairly liberal paper.
Yeah, they've got it, just own, happens to be slanted in a way that you agree with.
Yeah, and you believe in the journalistic product. Like, there's this whole bunch of stories that we tell ourselves, lots of them. It's not just, it's not as simple as like, oh, the New York Times is trustworthy. You know, it's really easy to see that that bubble popping, like when a whole bunch of people just don't care. Like, I don't care. No, I don't trust it. That is the paper for the people who are putting me down. Of course I don't trust it.
Right.
So then it's like, it does, like, it's not even a question of journalism. It's more a question of motivation of the people producing the paper. So at some point, so anyway, if you, so the point, what I'm getting at is that at some point you're trusting somebody. So if someone is telling a story, you're hearing some news, you're trusting somebody because you were not there. Like, yeah, the, like, even if it's a, you know, it's basically gossip, and the thing that you're trusting is that the person telling you this story has a reputation to lose by it being revealed that they lied to you. That's really it. So when you look at somebody like the New York Times, they've got a lot of reputation to lose. They've got a lot riding on their reputation. So they have a lot of motivation and financial, basically, because that would, if they lost their reputation with their audience,
they would lose subscribers, and yeah,
they would lose a lot of money. They'd probably completely, I mean, they've weathered some tough situations in the past, but they've done it. You know, and think of someone you know that's just basically an over-exaggerator or a straight-up liar. You can't trust anything they say.
Yeah, yeah, I know several people like that.
So at some point, though, you have to trust some messenger. And the messenger, I think, the messenger you're going to tend to trust is the one that has the most to lose from lying. So Snopes, this was all because of Snopes. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Snopes. Yes, you're still trusting Snopes, but I don't know.
Snopes has built up a reputation over the decades.
Decades. And I assume that they're monetizing that somehow, but I don't really know. But they would certainly have something to lose if they would lose that reputation, and per, and if they're monetized, then some money too, if they did something that jeopardized the reputation, you know, jeopardized the trust that their readers had in them. So you could imagine Snopes for big videos, like,
yeah,
no,
like, if, like if this was part of YouTube, like if YouTube offered this.
Yeah, Snopes is a service.
Yeah.
Right. So then what? Then what? Okay. Video. This video's blowing up. You know, it's getting. Oh, there you go. So videos that get like at over a certain number of views, or maybe they get flagged as, this is phony.
Shares, or
and a certain number of flags for like, nah, this can't be real. I don't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could. Then it could maybe get verified. So, like, how do you verify it though? Like, somebody who doesn't care, I guess, has to go be the journalist in the room and go reach out to the source. Man,
a lot of work.
But yeah, I mean, you see pictures online, you don't believe them, you know?
No,
I mean,
not at all.
Yeah, if there's any reason, if it seems incredible in any way, I mean, in the unbelievable sense, then you just be like, it's Photoshop. Like, what a cool picture, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's like every time I see an article, it's like, 10 incredible photos of X. I think to myself, 10 incredibly Photoshopped pictures of X.
Right. Yeah. So I guess that's just what will happen with video. It's just like,
we're gonna just have to use the internet for cats and
entertainment, right? It's like any major decisions, it just feels like any major group decisions. Mm-hmm. So like public sentiment or political campaigns, it just feels like, oh, right. This is one of the things I wanted to talk about. So what do candidates do? Do they got to go back to the stump, like literal stump speeches, like go around on the back of a train, whistle stop tour?
Yeah.
Is that what happens? Like, do they have to travel more? Do they have to show up in person more, speak to an auditorium more? so that you can be like, okay, I literally saw this come out of the person's mouth.
Yeah, I think so.
And then everybody who was at that thing, because it was everybody's at this rally, 10,000 people go to this rally, and then they leave, and they are going to tell people about it. And those people need to trust them. So how are they going to tell the people? Of course, in person, though, and people will trust that.
That's going to lead to some woefully uninformed voters, though, as if most voters aren't uninformed enough as it is. It's one thing to sit down and watch a video of a political candidate that you disagree with and maybe at least, okay, I see what they're saying. Mm-hmm. No one actually goes to the effort of getting out and going to a rally of a candidate they don't support.
Right. Yeah. Echo chamber. What if in a situation like that, the validity of the video could be, it could be tested by the number of videos of the same event. So if you have like 10,000 people in a room, And it just becomes common practice for people to videotape the whole thing.
Yeah.
Now YouTube in aggregate, we have 500 videos of the same event.
Same thing happening.
That would be pretty hard to fake.
Yeah, and especially if you get in like, okay, and one of them's from the New York Times that has this reputation, or one of them is from Reuters or mm-hmm. something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was actually picturing a press conference with, you know, there's like 75 microphones in front of the person talking, mm-hmm. like all from each different news organization, kind of like that with cameras. Like, oh, look,
which I'm sure there are.
Yes. 50 people shot this same thing. The videos all match perfectly. That would be still, I would still like, could those be generated on the fly? Probably. Yeah. So then it comes back to trusting the organization. Like, who says it's real? Oh, the New York Times says it's real. All right. Then I trust the video based on how much I trust the New York Times and the people the people I'm trying to convince are people who don't trust the New York Times in the first place. So it doesn't transfer. Oh man, this is going to be a big mess. This is a big mess.
Yeah. Yeah, just gonna stick to reading the Fluffpo and.
Seriously, really? I mean, I'm noticing a lot of people who get all of their. This is confirmation bias, but I get most of my news from. I get a lot of news from Slack. Because yeah. they're small communities of people who I have history with. I don't know hardly any of them.
Right.
But I have history with them. So it's like, oh, you know, I've been in this Slack room with this group of 100 people for 2 years. We've kind of hung around each other. I know certain people to be hotheads.
Trustworthy people, yeah.
Yeah, some people are hotheads. Some people are, you know, jokesters. Some people are lurkers. So if anybody, you know, so I have a particular level of trust for each different person about a different kind of thing. Like maybe this person's really great at monitoring software and this person really knows Rails, or this person's really into movies that we happen to have the same taste in movies. So I trust different people for different things in different ways and different right. amounts. It just feels like mass media is crumbling, and I'm including the internet in that. It seems like the web, I should say, not the internet, but the web feels like the next mass media that's kind of crumbling. That's weird.
It is weird. Yeah. Yeah. I don't have an answer.
No, this can be a mess though. I expect to see. So yeah. Expect to see lawsuits, expect to see this in court, expect to see the software outlawed
right.
or attempts to outlaw the software. Expect to see the ISPs and cable providers try to get in on this to do so. Oh, see, we told you we need a DRM. We told you we need a DRM.
Yeah.
Yeah. God damn, DRM is a solution to this.
Well,
man, maybe Timbo is actually ahead of his time. He saw this coming.
Who saw that coming? Yeah.
Yeah. Tim Berners-Lee saw it coming.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, that's all fun and dandy. Mm. So anyway, folks, we should probably, we're not going to get any deeper into this, I don't think.
Yeah, we'll stop now before it gets more depressing.
Right.
Before we have to like start paying a subscription.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, because now they have something to lose. You see, that's the thing. It's like, if you have nothing to lose, then why not?
Right. Right. I mean, the internet's like a giant game of Whose Line. Everything's made up, but the points don't matter.
Of what? I've never heard that.
You, Whose Line is it anyway? You'd never watched it?
Uh-uh.
That's not on anymore, but, and I'm slightly lowering my assessment of you as a friend.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, it's a show.
A TV show.
Called Whose Line Is It Anyway? It's all improv comedy.
Okay.
And
it was probably on TV in one of the years that I lived in a van or something.
I think it was bigger in the, I think it was big in the 90s.
That would be the period.
It was a British show for a long time, and then it came over here and was hosted by Drew Carey.
Okay, and that sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah. Look for clips on YouTube. They're all over the place, and you're probably the only person I know who has no clue what I'm talking about, so I'm sure our listeners are probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I was TV-less until probably 2003.
Yeah, I was TV-less for a long stretch of the 90s, too, but... Yeah, anyway.
We wouldn't be able to believe any of that stuff anyway.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, I see your point now. Just the web just becomes like one long improv.
Yeah, but I mean, that was the tagline on the show, because these improv actors would go up and do things, and they would award points by the host that meant absolutely nothing. So the tagline was, where everything's made up and the points don't matter. So.
That's pretty funny. Where everything's made up and the points don't matter. There you go.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, let's just stick a fork in it before I start crying. That's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.